Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is January the 24th, and we are in Parshas Vayikra, and we're on page 548, Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. We talked about the carbon ola, the carbon that is completely burned. We talked about when it's brought from, as an animal, meaning a cow, a sheep, or a goat. But now we move to the same type of carbon, but if it's brought as a bird. There are three ways it can be brought, either as an animal, a bird, or as what they call a meal offering, flour, F-L-O-U-R. So now we talk about a bird. When a carbon is brought as a bird, when it could have been brought as an animal, that is would only be done because the person bringing the carbon can't afford the more expensive animal. If it's brought as a flour offering, when it could have been brought as a bird or as an animal, that is because the person offering the carbon is very poor. Sometimes the Torah requires that the carbon be a flour offering or a bird offering, in which case it doesn't prove anything. But when a person has a choice and brings a bird rather than an animal or brings flour, that shows the person is not able to afford the more expensive carbon. The animals cost far more than the birds, and the birds cost more than the flour. So the pasuk says, "V'imin ha'of ola carbon ola Hashem," and if from a bird is the ola of his carbon to Hashem. So the Torah allows two types of birds to be used as a carbon. V'hikriv min ha'torim, o min b'nei hayona es karbono. So your choices are from the torim or from the b'nei hayona. Now they translate that as the turtle doves. That would be the torim, or the young doves, which means a regular dove but young. These are two different. Well, I guess they're two different species. They're definitely two different types of birds. And the torim can only be offered once they are adult birds. They cannot be brought when they are young. A tor, that they call a turtle dove, has to be of the adult form. The b'neyona, as the word b'ney implies, the beginning, which means children, or yeah, I guess children, it has to be a young yona. It cannot be older. The yona, the dove, is only acceptable when it is under a year, whereas the tor is only acceptable when it's over a year.
This is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Was that
the commentary on
yeah.
The bottom?
Yeah, it says.
The you can say
maturity is indicated by the glistening sheen of the feathers around the neck.
Yeah, yeah, that's how they figure out this, the age of the bird. Since I am not a zoologist or a, what do you call it, bird person?
Ornithologist,
right, that's right. So I declined to talk about that, but yeah. Okay. So those are the only two types of birds that are acceptable as carbonos. Just like with animals, the only three types of animals are cows, sheep, and goats. With birds, it's only these two types of birds that are acceptable. V'hikrivoa kohen ala mizbeach. The Kohen will bring it to the Mizbeach. Now, the Torah here doesn't mention it explicitly. It will be mentioned later in the Torah. It also has to be a male bird, just as...
This says male.
I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Right. It does not have to be male. Right. It also can have a blemish. Unlike the animals, it can be male or female, and it can have a blemish. It can't be missing a limb, but it can have a blemish. The Kohen shall bring it to the Mizbeach. The Gemara says the reason why the Torah writes V'hikrivo, the Kohen will bring it, to tell the Kohen that even if the person offering the carbon only has one bird, which is a very meager offering, nevertheless it should be brought. So he should bring it to the Mizbeach. U'malak esrosho, and he will do malika to its head. How do they translate that?
Nip its head.
Okay, we'll discuss that in a moment. V'hiktira mizbecha, and burn it on the mizbeach. Prior to burning it, v'nimtza damo al kira mizbeach, the blood should be squeezed onto the wall of the Mizbeach. He says, they say pressed its blood. Same thing. Squeeze the blood onto the wall of the Mizbeach. Okay. So here we have several differences between a bird and the other and the large animals. A bird is not shechted. Now you should know that today, not just today, in time of the Beis HaMikdash as well, if you want to eat a bird, you have to shecht it. The same way that you slaughter an animal, you have to slaughter a bird. It's the same rules. The bird, slaughtering of a bird, there are some leniencies in how the slaughtering is done. But nevertheless, it still requires slaughtering. Meaning, a knife is used to cut the neck, the esophagus and the trachea, and that is shechita. That's what's done for animals, that's what's done for birds. But when a bird is brought as a karban, shechita is not done. Instead, malika is done. And malika is different than shechita. Malika is done from the back of the neck, rather than from the front of the neck, which is where the trachea and the esophagus are. It's done from the back of the neck. In addition, rather than using a knife, the kohen uses his thumbnail to sever the neck of the bird. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma that there were three very difficult services in the Beis HaMikdash. Three very difficult things to do. We're going to learn about two of them tonight. One of them, which we're not going to learn about tonight, was what the Kohen Gadol did in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. That was a very complicated and difficult thing to do. For one person to handle all that had to be handled, Mirtza Hashem, when we get to it in Parashas HaCharemos, we're going to discuss it. But that was not done on a regular basis. But the other two, one involves a bird and one involves a meal offering, a flower offering. The one of the things that was very difficult was Malika. Malika was a hard thing to do. It was not easy to position the bird correctly and to be able to use one's nail to sever the neck properly without ruining the karban. It was a difficult, it was one of the avodos kashos, Sheba Mikdash, one of the difficult services in the Beis HaMikdash.
So why was it like that?
Torah says so.
Yeah, I got that part.
That's why.
Oh.
Okay. Now, when one does shechita, when one does a regular shechita, regular slaughtering of animals or birds, typically the head is not cut off. When they do a shechita on an animal or bird, they don't cut off the head with the shechita. Now, of course, they cut off the head later in the processing of the meat, but in the initial shechita, the head is not cut off. And the reason why the head is not cut off is because in order to cut off the head, one would have to cut through first the simanim, the trachea and the esophagus, which is the appropriate way to do shechita. But then one would also have to cut the bone, which is called the vertebrae in the back of the neck. Thank you. They've cut the vertebrae in the back of the neck. And cutting the vertebrae in the back of the neck runs the risk of ruining the knife. In fact, when someone is slaughtering animals, if his knife goes far into the neck and actually hits the vertebrae, then the knife may not be used for another shechita until it is checked to make sure that it didn't get nicked when it hit the bone. Even though the knife is very, very sharp and can cut through the bone, but it can also cause a nick in the knife, which would make the knife no good for shechita. A shechita knife must be perfectly smooth. You know how they check a shechita knife? They check a shechita knife with one's fingernail. Well, you run your fingernail up the blade of the knife to make sure that the fingernail doesn't get caught on anything. Now, you say, like, right? Those who know how to do it, they do it all the time. And, you know, I saw a shechita, you know, run his finger up with no problem. It is considered to be proper etiquette when a rav walks into a slaughterhouse for the shechit to offer the rav his knife for the rav to check it. That's considered the proper etiquette to do. Now, I'm not sure what happens if the rav declines, because I've never done it and I don't know that I would want to try it without ever having done it before. I mean, I've done it on a butter knife, but I've never done it on a real knife. So, but anyway, that's what would have to happen if the knife did hit the vertebrae in the back of the neck, then the knife would have to be checked to make sure it has not become nicked and therefore no good. So typically, when shechita is done, not only is it done from the front of the neck, but it's deliberately not done all the way through the neck. It's only done in the front of the neck. The goal of the shechita is to cut only the trachea and the esophagus and also the carotid arteries. That's not required, but it is best if the shechita also cuts the carotid arteries, because as we know, the blood is not kosher, and it is a lot easier to remove the blood from the animal prior to salting. It's a lot easier to remove the blood from the animal if the carotid arteries are cut, because it will, that will force the blood out, and then the salting process will work a lot better. So that's the goal of the shechit, of the one who's slaughtering animals. But his goal is not to hit the back of the neck. With Malika, because the kohen is coming from the back of the neck, he must cut through the vertebrae and then cut through the esophagus and the trachea. And so it's a different process completely. Malika, if Malika were done to a regular bird, that bird is treif. That is not a kosher shechita. And if shechita were done to the carbon is pasul. It's no good. You have to do shechita to a bird that you want to eat regularly. You have to do malika to a bird that is a carbon. Now this particular carbon, the ola, is not eaten. So it doesn't really make a difference. However, we will have a carbon that uses a bird later on that is eaten by the Kohen, and yet Malika is done. So it's a fascinating thing in that if it's not regularly kosher, it's only kosher for the Kohen to eat it because it's a carbon. And in fact, if Shechita were done, it would be no good. It has to be Malika. But if he would try Malika on a regular animal that's not a carbon, no one's allowed to eat it, including the Kohen. It's treif. I mean, a non-Jew could eat it. But it's considered like an animal that was shot in the head. It was not slaughtered properly if Malika was done. A fascinating thing with birds, and only with birds, not with animals, only with birds, where the Torah requires a different way of slaughtering the bird, which is mutually exclusive to the regular way of slaughtering an animal or a bird. Good question.
What actually kills the animal that undergoes shechita?
Yeah, the Gemara presumes it is the severing of the two simanim, of the trachea and the esophagus.
Yeah. Just on occasion, the bird has been shechted, but the chicken can still be.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with it being dead or alive. Even when it's fully dead, you can cut off the head completely. You can do that.
It's walking.
Yeah, that's it's dead. It's dead. It just that's just the muscles are right. Yeah.
So, it's like linen wool and like the 39 malachos and like a bunch of different things that are forbidden to people, unless you're a kohen.
Okay, but it's only a kohen under these circumstances.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, you're correct. Like wearing shatnez in the Kohen's clothing for the Beis Hamikdash. He can't wear shatnez when he goes to Shul on Shabbos, but he can only wear it when he is performing the service in the Beis Hamikdash. That's correct. That's right. Yeah.
Did they play musical instruments in Shabbos?
Did they play? I believe they did. But that's playing musical instruments is only Darabbanan. That's rabbinic. That's not the same thing as this.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And is there a reason for this, or we don't?
Yeah, no, there are reasons. There are reasons, but so far we have. Yeah.
Oh, so.
You mean for Malika? Reasons for what?
For everything. She was with all.
Torah says
that. That's a great
reason.
Was there a subgroup of specialists amongst the Kohanim that were able to do this?
Yeah, yeah. Not every Kohen knew how to do Malika. You had to be specially trained to do it.
Did they have to be careful when they handled normal objects, their clothes? I mean, it's like carrying an open knife on your hand.
Yeah, okay, that's true. But I mean, those who play guitar without a pick also, they grow their nail long and they play. You know, people learn how to be careful. It doesn't have to be super, super sharp. It'll still cut.
But the
neck of the bird isn't so strong.
Long? Did What's it have that? To be very long?
I don't think it had to be that long.
No?
I don't think so.
Gross.
Yeah. No. I don't remember. It had to be a little bit, but I don't know.
See, Rabbi Pransky, the whole
concept also of shechita, I thought, was that the animal shouldn't have to suffer because it's very quick. So if you do malika and if you're going through the bone and to get to the trachea and the esophagus, that seems to be a little bit more stress for the bird.
It may be. It is very quick. It goes very quickly. But you should know that the reason we do shechita is because the Torah says so, not because it's nice to the animals. It happens to be that it does kill the animal quickly. But if the Torah would say to kill the animal slowly, then we would do that too. And we don't do it because it's a quick way to kill the animal. We do it because the Torah says so. It happens to be quick. And even malika is quick. It's a very fast thing. He goes right through. It's not a slow... Shechita is not allowed to be a slow process. It has to be very fast. What's that?
It's a chicken neck.
Yeah, chicken necks are very small. It goes right through. Not chicken. These birds.
Oh, these birds.
Chickens have bigger necks.
Right, these birds.
When you're used to looking at a chicken neck, those are pretty big. These birds are their necks are very small.
I would think if you're going through the vertebrae, you're cutting the spinal cord.
Yeah, the spinal cord. Yeah.
Death is instantaneously.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Is there any mention of being right-handed or left-handed in the
Torah? Well, we know that there is an opinion that a Kohen that is left-handed cannot perform service in the Beis HaMikdash.
Oh.
Cool.
At
all? Yeah. There is such an opinion.
Yeah.
We'll get to Kohanim when we get to Parshas Emor. We're going to talk about all the different types of mumim, types of blemishes for a Kohen. And, you know, everybody in America how can you hold anything against anybody and handicaps and all that.
Yeah.
If it's a mum, there's a mum. We don't, you know, the Torah says no. That's all.
That's just for the Kohen.
Yeah.
Service.
Yeah.
Do we know why the dove was chosen? The dove is, you know, that bird of peace.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, we have psukim where the Jewish people are compared to a dove. Could be that.
Well, even the teva, the same
yeah.
time.
Yeah, yeah, could be.
Maybe another point is that doves can be cultivated, you know. Like uh-huh. They can be raised.
They can be raised.
They don't have to be wild animals, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe yeah. that was important.
Yeah, yeah. And it has to be a kosher animal. These are kosher animals. Okay. Now, now that's one major difference with the shechita of a bird. It's done with malika, not with shechita. Another big difference is that where we had with the animals before, that the blood was caught after the shechita. The blood was caught in a container. The container was then taken to the mizbeach, and the blood was thrown, the kohen stood on the floor, and threw the blood at the mizbeach. Remember, he threw it at the corners, the two corners of the mizbeach, so the blood would go on either side, so it was two, which is four, like we have on the picture. Right. In this case, the blood was not caught nor thrown. Instead, the blood was squeezed from the animal directly onto the wall of the mizbeach. The way it says it in the English over here is having pressed out its blood on the altar's wall. So it was squeezed out. Now, there can be a way of blood being thrown from the bird, but it's more difficult to do. We'll learn about it later with the karban chatas, with the sin offering, when a bird is used for a sin offering. We'll learn about that later towards the end of Parshas Vayikra. But here with the karban ola, the blood was not thrown on the mizbeach, it was only squeezed onto the mizbeach directly from the body of the bird. So a different way of getting the blood onto the mizbeach. Pasuk Tez Zayin, verse 16, Vehisiris mura so benotza sa. Now this is a little bit difficult to translate. They say he removes
its crop
with its feathers. Okay. Where is the crop of the bird?
It's part of the stomach. It's part of the GI tract.
Yeah. So the intention over here is that the stomach and intestines of the bird are removed. They are removed from the bird. They're cut out of the bird. And they're thrown next to the mizbeach to the east, el mekom hadashen, to the same place as the deshen. The deshen means the ashes of the mizbeach, and the stomach and intestines of the bird are thrown to the same place as the ashes. So on our picture over here, where you have the mizbeach, and the part of the mizbeach that faces the main part of the Beis Hamikdash is the west part. Towards here is to the west. There's southwest, that's the west. And here's the main part of the Beis Hamikdash. This way is east. So the east is further away, so to speak, from the Shekhinah, from Hashem's divine presence, which rests at the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The east is further away, so to speak. Of course, there's no real way of getting away from Hashem. But, so to speak, Kiviyachol, the east is further away. Where they throw it is, the ramp is over here. The ramp is on the south side of the Mizbeach. The ashes from the Mizbeach, when we learn about Trumas Hadeshen, where they take ashes off of the Mizbeach every morning, and the ashes from the menorah, and the ashes from the inside Mizbeach, and also the stomach and intestines of the bird were thrown to the east, right around here. To the east side of the ramp of the Mizbeach. Now the ramp goes up into the air. So you throw them on the floor, they are now blocked from view from... If you're standing over here on this side of the Mizbeach, you're standing near the Beis Hamikdash, you can't see this stuff. All of this is thrown over here. So it's thrown on the floor of the either the Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash, right over here to the east of the ramp of the Mizbeach. And again, which things are thrown there? The stomach and intestines of the bird, the ashes taken off of the Mizbeach here, the ashes taken off of the Mizbeach on the inside, and the ashes taken from the menorah. They are all thrown over there. A nes happened, a miracle occurred, and all of whatever was thrown over there was absorbed into the ground. Now, it is a miracle in the Mishkan, when what was over there was just dirt. Still, for it to be absorbed into the ground by itself without digging anything, that is miraculous. It's a greater miracle in the Beis HaMikdash when the floor was marble. But it was absorbed into the ground, and that's where it went. So that is where it is thrown. Yeah?
What ashes are on the menorah?
From burning every night.
I thought that was oil.
Yeah, when you burn oil with wicks, you're going to end up with ashes.
Oh, the wick.
Yeah. You'll end up with ashes. Yeah. What's that?
It will go on the marble and
it would be absorbed into the ground. Yeah. Now, the Gemara says that here again we have a difference between a bird and an animal. The animal, if you recall, the intestines were removed from the animal, washed, and then put back together with the animal when the animal was burned. The intestines were burned along with the animal. Here, the stomach and intestines are removed and they are thrown away. They are not burned on the Mizbeach. They're rejected. The Gemara says, why should that be? What's the difference between a bird and animals? So the Gemara says, because an animal eats me'evus be'oleha, from the trough of its owner, of its master. A bird eats from gezel, from theft. A bird just flies around, finds food and eats it. It could be it's eating from your field or my field or wherever it's eating from. There's no way to know where a bird ate, and most of the time birds eat from that which belongs to other people. And so birds, because it ate from theft, therefore the stomach and the intestines are rejected. This is consistent with what we learned in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, that we talked about it last week already, right? That the most significant thing about Karbanos is that it cannot be stolen. Adam, we said, it has to be like Adam Arishon. It all belonged to him. There was nothing that could be stolen. So too, you cannot bring an offering to Hashem of something that is not does not belong to you. That is very, very important. So the bird, which naturally steals when it eats, so it has to be rejected. The stomach and the intestines must be rejected. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. What happens next? Vishisa oso vichnafav lo yavdil. The animal is opened up, is torn open. They say he shall split it with its wings, he should not completely separate it. So the bird, what you've done now is you have to picture the bird, picture that the underside of the bird where the stomach is has already been removed. So now the bird, if you pull on the wings, you'll pull the bird apart. The front of the bird will open up. So it has to be pulled apart like that, but not completely severed into two pieces. Just that the front of the bird now is opened up completely. So he pulls on the wings and pulls the bird apart partially, but not to separate it. And then v'hiktiroso ha-kohen ha-mizbecha, the kohen burns it on the mizbech, al ha'etzim asher lo'esh, on the wood which is on the fire. Ola hu, it is an ola, it is a completely burnt offering. Ishei re'ach nichoach la-Hashem, it is a burnt offering to Hashem. And it's a sweet-smelling burnt offering to Hashem. The Gemara says that, now again, I do not speak from experience, I just don't know how these things work, but the Gemara says that there are very few things that smell worse than bird feathers being burned. The bird feathers here are not removed. And when it's burned on the Mizbeach, it's a foul odor. So, is it true?
Foul.
Foul, very good, okay. Good. So the Gemara says, Right. I don't mean is it true, but I meant do you have experience with that?
No.
Okay. So the Gemara says that the...
Terrible odor.
Okay. So the Gemara says that the reason why the feathers are left on is, for again, because since it's a poor person who's offering the bird, and a bird has very little meat in it compared to an animal, it wouldn't look full. It wouldn't look nice. If you'd remove the feathers, you have this scrawny little thing. It doesn't look like a... So in order to preserve the dignity of the poor person who's offering the bird, the feathers are left on the bird. And also, at the end over here, it says that it is a reach nichoach la Hashem. It is a sweet-smelling or a pleasant-smelling thing for Hashem. If you'll notice, back at the end of the previous paragraph in Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, with the animals, you have the same phrase at the end. Yishei reach nichoach la Hashem. It is a pleasant smell for Hashem, a pleasant aroma for Hashem. The Gemara says this is to teach us that Hashem is just as, so to speak, pleased with the bird offering from the poor person as he is with the animal offering from the rich person. Hashem does not play favorites in that way. As long as a person is doing something sincerely and giving what they can afford, Hashem is happy with it. And we learn from here, the Gemara says, Echad hamarba ve'echad hamamit, the same as a person who does a great amount, who does a lot, and the one who does very little, as long as his heart is sincere for heaven, he's doing it for the right reason, Hashem appreciates it all the same. And the Gemara learns from here, this rule applies to many different things. The Gemara applies this to learning Torah, someone who has the ability to learn a lot of Torah, someone who only has the ability to learn a little bit of Torah, again, echad amarba ve'echad amamit, whether he does a lot or whether he does a little, uvavad shecham libo l'shamayim, as long as his heart's in the right place, which means he's doing it sincerely, and he's doing what he can do. And the Gemara also applies this to davening, which a person has to daven, and a person can only say, some people have the fluency and the time to daven all of the davenings, all the prayers. Some people don't have the fluency or don't have the time, or both, and they can only say a few of the davening. The Gemara says the same thing. Echad amarba ve'echad amamit, whether it's a lot, whether it's a little, as long as a person is sincere and is doing what they can do, then Hashem accepts it equally. And of course, the same applies to tzedakah and any other mitzvah as well.
Years ago when Abraham made that
good
carbon,
yeah,
the carbon, and there was,
yeah,
there
was, so that was not a carbon. That was not a carbon.
But that was a bris.
That was a covenant. And there he was commanded to cut everything in half. The animals were also cut in half over there.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good. Excellent. Good point. Okay.
Why does it say to remove the crop with its feathers, and then later on it says it'll be burned with its feathers?
Yeah, so that's why it's hard to translate. Some translate it meaning with its feathers, as they did over here, and that means the feathers that are covering the crop, just that area. That's all it means. That the feathers of that part of the body are removed. others understand that the word notsasa, which is translated as feathers over here, does not mean feathers in this case, in this context, meaning in Pasuk Tezayin in verse 16.
Right, yeah.
Rather, it means with that which has that which has a foul smell.
Okay.
And it's referring to the intestines.
The rest of the intestines.
Right. That's right.
So there's one. It seems like there's one operation that's omitted. I guess it's just implied that after pressing out the blood on the altar's wall, the bird's got to be split on the frontal aspect.
No, it does say that. That's where he pulls on the wings.
But he's already removed his crop. I mean, you can't get the crop out. See, I don't know how one would get its GI tract out unless it were split down the belly.
First, he cuts it out. He takes a knife and cuts it out.
Oh, that's where the cutting goes.
Yeah.
They're removing its crop. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
That's with the knife.
To okay.
cut, like, he makes like a circle or whatever, an oval, and pulls out that part.
Okay.
And then
now
right.
I understand.
Now the next paragraph begins the discussion of what they call a meal offering, a flower offering. I think both words are misleading. I think when people hear the word meal, they think of having supper. And I think when people hear the word flower, they think of smelling something. So, but anyway, there are many types of flower offerings. And the Torah here is going to discuss most of them in the next few psukim. So we'll begin the discussion. It's likely that we will not finish it tonight and have to continue next week in the middle of the discussion of the meal offering. V'nefesh ki sakriv karban mincha laHashem, a nefesh, a soul that will bring an offering of a mincha, that's a meal offering to Hashem. So now we mean here for an ola, which means it's going to be completely burned. Wrong. We'll see. This is a little different than what we've had until now. So someone brings a meal offering to Hashem. Soles ye karbono. The carbon must be soles. So soles is fine flour. Growing up in Jewish day schools and hearing the word fine flour over and over and over again, I never knew what fine flour was. What's the difference between fine flour and not fine flour? Anyway, fine flour means it's been sifted many times so that the flour is not coarse, but it's very well ground. So it's a very, very fine flour. The flour that we buy is fine flour. Because we, in our very pampered American ways, we have very beautiful white flour that has been very, very well ground. And very uniformly ground. But that wasn't always so simple to do. And so here, it must be soles. It must be a very fine flour. Soles ya karbono, the carbon must be soles, must be fine flour. V'yatzak aleha shemen, he will pour oil on it. It's not really pour. They use the word pour, okay.
Pour
oil on it.
What would you say? What
it's more like...
drip?
No. Yeah, yitzika is more like to spray oil on it. Like it's more like a...
Schwitz.
Yeah, the spritz or something like that. But okay, but they pour is also, you know, they pour oil on it. Vinasana leha lavona, and put on it lavona. Lavona is spices. They call it frankincense. So that is put on the carbon. It's not besamim. Besamim is what you smell. Lavona is spices that you taste. So that's put on the mincha as well. Now the mincha, the carbon mincha, requires these things. It requires flour, it requires oil, and it requires lavona, this frankincense, these spices. There are different types, as I mentioned, of minachos, of meal offerings, and if a person does not specify which one he means, when he says, I pledge to bring a karban mincha, if he does not say which type he wants to bring, then the default is this first one. And this first one is called a minchas soles. It's called a fine flour offering. Now, all of the offerings are fine flour. But the difference is this one is going to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash in the state of flour. That's the way it's going to be brought. Not after it's been baked or fried or anything else. It's brought as flour to the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore it's called a karban, a minchas soles, a fine flour meal offering. And this is the default one that you bring. We will see that the karban mincha is not eaten by the person offering it. The karban mincha will be eaten by the kohen. He will eat from the karban mincha. But the rule is, with all karbanos, everything, every single thing that's brought in the Beis HaMikdash, a portion of it, if not all of it, has to go to the Mizbeach. Something has to get burned. So with the karban ola, it was easy. The whole thing got burned. With other karbanos, we'll see different parts of the animal get eaten, different parts of the animal get burned. But everything has to have something that gets burned. We'll see when we get to the lechem hapanim, when we get to the showbread, all of those were eaten. So there has to be something that gets burned, and that's why there was also spices on the table, and that's what got burned. Something has to get burned. So here we'll see that a portion of this flour is going to get burned as well. So he brings this to the kohen. Now it starts off v'nefesh, a soul, which is different than the other ones. The other ones was Adam or no reference whatsoever. Here it says a soul. So again, Chazal or sages tell us that since the person offering the flour offering is going to be of the most destitute of the Jewish people, because they can't afford even a bird, he's going to bring just flour. So therefore, Hashem recognizes that it's a great self-sacrifice for this person to bring a karban. And Hashem says, in my book, he has offered his soul. If he's willing to bring a karban, even though he can't afford it, then I consider it as if he has brought his nefesh, his soul. Yeah?
If this is completely off topic, but I'm wondering, were there people who had a monopoly on grinding the flour? Hmm. Were there people that we knew about?
Good. The Beis HaMikdash kept on hand it kept on hand flour, oil, spices, wine. All these things were kept on hand by the Beis HaMikdash. There was a great need for all of these commodities. The Beis HaMikdash would strike a deal with grain providers, with wine providers, oil providers, all these things at the beginning of the year. They would strike a deal. And it was a great honor to have that
you're the vendor.
It's like being purveyor to the king or queen.
So to have that contract was a great honor. However, it was not that lucrative. It was lucrative in the sense that there was great volume, but you couldn't charge that much because the Beis HaMikdash you were expected to give a good price to the Beis HaMikdash. Not only that, but you ran a risk with the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash can never lose. So if mid-year the price goes up, you have to maintain the lower price. And if mid-year the price goes down, you have to lower your price. So it did not enrich anybody in a big way. It didn't make anybody poor. It was a climb. But
as being the purveyor of the finest flour.
Yes.
To the Beis HaMikdash,
then it gave you a good name with other people.
So
yeah.
Were there certain families do we know if there were certain families or certain names?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't recall there being specific names of families that were the providers of these things. We do find that the Gemara and the Mishnayos list different families that were skilled in, for example, making the ketores, making the incense, and how to grind that up properly, or some of the other specialty items of the Beis HaMikdash. But here I don't believe that there was a special family that did this.
Right. Yeah. So did these vendors have special bracha and pesh bracha because they did Lashem Shemayim?
I hope so. I hope so. They didn't lose money on the deal, but it wasn't like now you're set for life,
right?
Because you have the Beis HaMikdash contract. Yeah. The next pasuk Beis, verse 2, Vehevya el bnei Aaron ha-Kohanim. He brings it to the sons of Aaron, the Kohanim. So now, what does he bring? He brings flour. The oil has already been put into the flour. And the incense, the spices, have also been put onto the flour. So picture a bowl of flour with oil in it and with spices. Now there's a big difference though between the oil and the spices. The oil preferably needed to be mixed into the flour. So it was a gooey thing. It wasn't like, you know, fine, it was gooey because the oil has been mixed in. It's not water, it's oil, so it hasn't turned into dough, but it's an oil mixed in, olive oil, mixed in with the flour. The spices were placed in just on the side, on the flour, but just on the side of the bowl, on the flour, but just to the side. This is very important because we're going to see in a moment that when the Kohen takes some out, he has to take out flour with oil, but not any of the spices. So the spices were placed on top of the flour, but on the side. They weren't spread out and they were not mixed in. It was just a pile of spices on one part of the top of this mixture. That's what the person would now bring to the Kohen. So until here, the non-Kohen has done everything. He's bought the flour, he's mixed in the oil, he's put the spices on top. And now he brings it to the Kohen. So what does the Kohen do? So Vavya b'nei Aaron ha-Kohanim, he brings it to the sons of Aaron the Kohanim. V'kamatz misham melo kumtso. So he will take his full, now they translate it as three fingers full from it. It's a handful. It's a handful. But the reason they've used three fingers is because the way the handful was taken, right? We'll demonstrate that in a moment. So he'll take a handful from there, misolta umishamna, from its flour and from its oil, al kolavonasa, in addition to its spices, which means the spices were not taken in that handful. Now the handful, as Mrs. Kaiser just demonstrated, was taken with three fingers. So we think of a handful like this. You take with your whole hand. That's not what they did. They took with three fingers, and the bottom finger, your fifth finger, was used to smooth out the bottom, to get rid of whatever was left over, because it had to be an exact three fingers full. It couldn't be too little, and it couldn't be squeezing out the sides. It had to just be a three finger full worth of flour. This was the other very difficult service in the Beis HaMikdash. It was very hard to take it properly and then to use your finger, I can't even do it, to use your finger to try to smooth away any excess from the bottom of your three fingers. That's the way it had to be taken. The names, your fingers have names in the Gemara. Your thumb is called Godel. This finger is called the Etzba, which is the Hebrew word for finger. But this one's called the Etzba. This one is called the Ama. I'll tell you what this one is in a minute. The fifth one is called the Zeres. The fourth finger is called the Kmitza, which is the same word we just had now as the three-finger handful. This finger is called the kmitza because of this process of taking the three-finger handful that you take from the flour. Now, no one did this except the Kohanim. Nevertheless, the standard name for the fourth finger is, I don't know how you count, whatever, this finger, the second to last finger, is called the kmitza for this reason. So, the Kohen had to take from the oil and from the flour, from the oil, but not including the spices. The spices were also going to be taken, but not in this handful. And the Kohen would then burn its remembrance on the Mizbeach. This is called its remembrance because this is the part that gets burned, is the handful and also all of the spices. The spices and the handful were burned on the altar. Ishereach nichoach la Hashem. It is a fire offering that is a pleasant smell to Hashem. So that's the part that gets burned. The three finger handful along with the spices, they get burned. The rest of it, what happens to it? Vinoseres mina mincha, the leftover of the mincha, the rest of it, le'aharon ulevanov, goes to Aaron and to his sons. Kodesh kadashim me'ishei Hashem. This is kodesh kadashim, holy of holies, from the fire offerings of Hashem. And we've discussed before that there's two levels of karbanos. There's kadshim kalim. Kal means light. There's the light kadshim, the light sanctified, lightly sanctified, shall we say? And there's kadshei kadshim, the holy of holies. That would be heavily sanctified. What's the difference between kadshei kadshim and kadshim kalim? What's the difference? So the kadshim kalim, the lighter ones, could be eaten by anybody who was tahar, who was pure. Anybody could eat it. So the kohen could share it with somebody if it was kadshim kalim. Plus, there were times when non-kohanim had what they had to eat from the karban. Let's take the karban Pesach. We all ate from the karban Pesach. The karban Pesach is kadshim kalim. It can be eaten by anybody who is tahar. And it could be eaten outside the Beis HaMikdash. It could not leave the walls of Yerushalayim, the old city, but it could be eaten outside the Beis HaMikdash, anywhere in the city. That's kadshim kalim. Kadshei kadshim, which is this higher level, could only be eaten by male kohanim who are fit to do the service of the Beis HaMikdash, and it had to be eaten at nowhere other than the Beis HaMikdash and its courtyard. That's it. It could not be taken outside the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So this, a karban mincha, is kadshei kadshim. It's of the higher level, and therefore can only be eaten by the male kohanim. They could not share it with their family, and it could only be eaten in the Beis HaMikdash or the courtyard, and the person eating it had to be someone who was able to do the service of the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the requirement of the kadshei kadshim, and this is the first type of mincha, of meal offering. It says la'aron ulevanov, to Aaron and to his sons. Now Aaron happens to have been alive when this was written. Aaron is no longer alive today. So what is the meaning of Aaron and his sons? We know his sons are all the Kohanim, but who is Aaron? So Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, and he represents the Kohen Gadol for all generations. And the rule is that the Kohen Gadol gets first dibs. If he wants to take it, he gets to take it. If he doesn't want to take it, then whatever he doesn't take, it's split up amongst all the Kohanim. They can make whatever system they want to divvy up the whatever is going to be eaten by the Kohanim on that particular day. Sometimes you could have a lot of things to be eaten. Sometimes there's very little to be eaten. It just depends on the day, how many karbanos are being brought. So but Aaron goes first, and then goes everybody else.
Well, I can't help but be struck by this, because it could be that somebody would take it with humility, that they're serving the whole Jewish people, and something has been designated for service to Hashem and them, or a person could feel that it's like Tammany Hall. Of course, they and their family get first dibs on anything good.
Right.
So, if there's any more you wanted to say
right.
about that.
Yeah, so you're talking about the Kohen Gadol himself.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So, it's true that as the Kohen Gadol, you are given all kinds of privileges. No different than the king. Right? The Kohen Gadol is the king of the Beis HaMikdash. That's a good way to think about it. I mean, he's in charge. And he is given a great deal of honor, and also a great deal of privilege, because that's the case. The goal was that the Kohen Gadol would be a worthy person. Now, in the first Beis HaMikdash, we merited having great Kohanim Gedolim, and many of them were Kohanim Gedolim for many, many years. They were great tzaddikim. The difference between a king and the Kohen Gadol is that the king, if he was not a tzaddik, could last for many years. The Kohen Gadol, if he was not a tzaddik, would often meet his demise very quickly. because the Kohen Gadol had to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Holy of Holies, on Yom Kippur. And if he did not behave properly, or he wasn't worthy, then the Gemara says he wouldn't live out the year. He didn't necessarily die on the spot, but he would not live out the year. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there were very few Kohanim Gedolim. There were very few. Only a few, and they lasted the entire 410 years of the Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash, which lasted 420 years, the Gemara says had more than 300 Kohanim Gedolim.
But many of those are bought. They were not.
That's the reason, because they bought the position. So why'd they buy the position? Because of the prestige and the power. But they didn't live out the year. Now the Gemara says, think about this though for a second. There were more than 300 Kohanim Gedolim. However, one of them, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years. Another one, Shimon HaTzadik, was Kohen Gadol for 40 years. And another one, Yishmael ben Pavi, was Kohen Gadol for, if I remember correctly, 12 years. Maybe it was 13 years. Let's say 12 years. So you've already used up 132 years out of 420 years. So you're already less than 300 years, and there were more than 300 Kohanim Gedolim. So that's less than one per year. That's more than one per year. What's that?
High turnover.
Right. And it didn't stop other ones from trying.
That's an unbelievable thing.
It's an amazing thing. People would die one after the other, and they would still run after this position. So you're correct that there was an allure to being the Kohen Gadol. But it wasn't like Tammany Hall. You couldn't hold on to it for too long. If you didn't deserve it, you didn't last.
During the second Beis HaMikdash, was there the Ark of the Covenant?
No, they did not have the Ark.
So the Kohen Gadol would go on Yom Kippur anyway?
Yeah.
But then there was not the... And he would still die?
Yeah. Really? When we get to Parashas Emor, hopefully we're going to remember... Hopefully we remember to do this, but when we get to Parashas Emor, Acharemos, and we talk about the service on Yom Kippur, we hopefully will remember to discuss what happened when there was no Ark. How did they do the service?
Right.
It was done anyway. But there were some alterations because of the fact that there was no Aron. So that's a good point. But yeah, but they died anyway if they were no good. Anymore. Yeah, they didn't make it.
I have a question. So if they took the three fingers to get the flour, did they go back later with their hand again take the spice?
I don't know how the spice was taken. And they had to take it with their hand for the flour and the oil.
Right.
And that was placed on the Mizbeach. And I don't know how they got it could be it was done with the hand, maybe it was done with the utensil. I don't know how they got the spices off. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, we haven't mentioned another ingredient. So far we've had three ingredients. The flour, the oil, and the spices. There is a fourth ingredient for every single karbon, which has not been mentioned yet.
Wine.
No, not wine.
Salt.
Salt has not been mentioned yet. We'll get to it later. So it has not been, we'll see later that there was also salt, but we have to discuss that later on. It's going to be, because the pasuk that discusses salt is going to say it's for all karbanos, there had to be salt. So we're going to get to that in a later point. Fine. Okay, so we're going to stop here. So again, we covered the first and also the default of mincha, of the meal offerings. And now next week, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll continue that we have several more to talk about before we finish about the menachos. Yeah. So there wasn't an official dining area, but they made them anyway. You know, there were rooms that were designated for the Kohanim. Yeah, and they ate over there. In Yechezkel, when it discusses the third Beis HaMikdash, it discusses dining areas.
Could they sit down and eat?
So they could not sit down in the Beis HaMikdash, but if they stepped out of the Beis HaMikdash into the courtyard, they could sit down. That's why they typically dined outside the Beis HaMikdash.
And that's still considered the courtyard.
Yeah. As long as it's not in the main part of the Beis HaMikdash. When I say courtyard, it's true. There were rooms that were covered. There were roofed. That were also, they could sit down in those rooms. They couldn't be in the Beis HaMikdash itself.
So then, were there certain korbanos that they had to eat standing up?
No. All of them could be brought into the courtyard. Yeah.
I already forget why these carbonos were being brought.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to, so far we're dealing with only voluntary carbonos. So the person decides they want to bring
them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.